With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is John Townley and today I'm joined by Matt Kendrick. Matt, are you okay?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. As you can probably tell from the title, the thumbnail, whatever it may be, the social that you've come to see the video from, it is the 10-year anniversary, or at least this week, or on Saturday, the April the 1st. It will be 10 years since Aston Villa conquered Europe again. Well, the next gen series, should we say, I think it was the under-19 team. Obviously beat Chelsea in the final. Back then it was Jack Grealish's, Callum Robinson's, other players as well, which we'll get on to, but those are probably the only two that fans will remember in terms of players that went on to, you know, sort of forge a professional career, I suppose. But yeah, 10 years ago, Matt, any recollections of the tournament itself, the final, the sort of whole event and what came after, we'll speak about, but any recollections of the sort of the day itself, or, you know, the Lake Como semi-final?
I'm just thinking how old you been, John, 10 years ago?
10 years ago. I would have been 12.
12 years old, blimey. Yeah, so I'd have been, so 2013, this would have been a bit of light relief from Paul Lambert's first season, which was a slog on the pitch, with the exception of Mr. Benteke working his magic. As a slog off the pitch as well at times with dealing with Paul Lambert. But he was there. I wasn't, but he was there for the final in Lake Como. And I do think that, he did try to keep an eye on the fortunes of the first team players. I went with the worst intro ever, have you won the Youth European Cup, the Youth European Cup, the Youth European Cup, which is probably one of the reasons why most of those players didn't make it, because they didn't want to feature in any future kind of Matt Kendrick match reports. I think they didn't want to be punted within an inch of their lives. So I was able to go to a couple of games at Villa Park. Sadly, even then, the Birmingham Mail, Birmingham Live budget didn't stretch to us following the under-19s across Europe. Those games under the floodlights had a good vibe about them. And I think it was good for the players' development as well. And we've been starved of European football, haven't we, in terms of a packed Villa Park and UEFA Cup, Europa League, Champions League, European Cup. So it's been a long time coming. So to have that little bit of experience, even if it was only kind of 11 sporting fans in the away end that, you know, 2,000 Villa fans were bantering with, it was just a good experience. And back then, and I think this is you'll find this a lot, when teams and clubs are going through struggles at a first team level, you always invest so much hope and energy and expectation in the next batch coming through and the next generation. And I think that was the case. So when we conquered Europe in 2013, we thought that we're only kind of 6 years away from that team maturing into proper Champions League winners. But it didn't quite. Well, one of them might still, haven't they? But yeah, we'll get to him amongst the others. But it won't be happening at Aston Villa.
Back then, that was that almost halfway through when you were covering the club as a Villa correspondent.
Yeah, so I had the glory years, really. Between about 2007-08 and 2014-15. So it started so well, and it kind of tailed off, but I managed to jump ship just before we got relegated. So I'll blame Greg Evans for that.
And the route itself for the next gen, to sort of paint the picture for fans, it's not just like you play four games in Lake Como and like one at Villa Park or something. I think it was like 10 games that they played overall to like win the whole competition. Like, it was a proper sort of Champions League format. And the next gen series itself is basically now rebranded as the UEFA Youth League. So if you switch on a Champions League game or on Wednesday, Tuesday night, usually before those games, you'll have like a Liverpool under-18s playing Ajax, or you know, Barcelona under 18s, whoever it is. So it is a genuinely, let's say, prestigious competition. But for that age group, those players are then expected to be playing in Champions League football and for their national league, national team, sorry, not in the National League, like some of ours did. There's obviously reasons for that, as we'll go on to. The route we had, obviously, Tony McAndrew, I think, was the manager. So we had Sporting, PSV and Celtic in our group. Sporting actually finished as the winners because we only beat Celtic and PSV once. We did batter Sporting in the last game as well, 5-1 at their stadium, which would have been some experience for our players, probably almost a highlight of some of their careers as well, which was, you know, obviously a really nice thing for them going to a different country and playing in a proper, you know, stadium and getting that sort of result as well. But yeah, we then played, was it Ajax, I think it was, the beat 2-1 away from home in the round 16 quarter final. It was 1-0 against Olympiacos at home, and that's when you go to Lake Como and play Sporting again in the semi-final, beat them 3-1 in extra time.
I'm going through my notes as you speak. Yeah, you're good knowledge, good research.
Painting the picture. And but that, I think Luis Cancelo, as you spoke to, said that going into that Sporting game away, they knew that they could win that. And then once you win that, obviously it's Chelsea in the final. So that experience of playing in Lake Como itself for the semi-final was good. And then obviously you get to the final and it's kind of anyone's to win, I suppose.
Yeah, I think they started the tournament quite slowly. Your memory might be better than mine or your research, but I think they didn't lose the first two games. And then you thought, well, actually, you know, I think they got to the quarterfinals the previous year and there were hopes that they could go further. And then when they started the group stage with, you know, sluggishly, you thought, well, perhaps not, but seemed to really gather momentum. And my memories of the games that I saw was, you know, Tony McAndrew, obviously been at Villa for many years then, good reputation for the work he'd done with the academy and the kids that he brought through, but was kind of a very kind of strict taskmaster. Tried to instill discipline in that team. And it was a new challenge for them, playing kind of against continental opposition, probably a bit of a stereotype here, but who may kind of play the game in a different way and have to learn to contend with that and still keep your discipline. So I think it was a really good experience. And I think back then, Samir Carruthers might have played for the first team by then, I think, because I think McLeish gave him a couple of games. I think he made his debut away at Liverpool. There weren't many who actually went on and played a single first-team game for Villa. Yeah, I think Carruthers would have been the only one who would have played. I stand corrected. Graham Burke would have played in the League Cup under Lambert first team. Carruthers would have played prior to that, towards the back end of McLeish's spell. And yeah, there's only a handful who ever progressed from being next-gen legends to Aston Villa first-teamers.
You look at it and think, oh, next-gen, we won, and it's great. And at the time, it certainly was. In the years that followed, it's great. But now you look back at it and think, well, we won the next-gen, but can that be classed as a success? Because the literal point of that competition, as is any youth game or tournament or whatever it may be, it's to help those players progress into you know, professional careers. And as you say, there's only a handful that actually made it. I think I had somewhere that only 5 of the 17, or maybe less than that now, are actually still in football, which is staggering, because although they're going to be, what, 10 years older than what they were, that means that they'd be like 28, 29, something around there. So sort of in the peak of their careers, or supposed to be. But then only 4 or 5 of them are actually still in, you know, professional football in terms of like the Nasty and Ipswich, obviously Jack, Man City, Burke, I think, is at Shamrock Rovers. So there's only about 4 or 5 of them that are still actually in this, you know, a couple are in National League, obviously, and some aren't even playing any football anymore. So that's kind of that's how, I don't want to sort of be so negative about it, but that's the sort of extent that we're looking at, which is quite remarkable, really.
Obviously, back then, picking up a showpiece trophy like that was success in its own right. But yeah, I think even a Villa team that was struggling, you know, throughout that period, those 3 or 4 years around that time before we eventually got relegated, even a Villa team that's circling the plug hole of the Premier League, that is still a big task to be able to have an academy that can produce Premier League ready players. To be fair, Villa's reputation back then, or maybe a little bit earlier, wasn't too bad in terms of getting players through to the Premier League. You know, you look at kind of all Brighton and Barry Bannon and Kieran Clark. You know, I think there was a famous Houllier game where Jonathan Hogg played as well, probably Eric Leo around the edges. So I think any academy, their job is to kind of make enough money for the academy to kind of wash its own face. So I think even though you say kind of several of that squad would have fallen out of the game completely. I think Villa probably would have got fees, or, you know, most of those players would have gone on to play probably Football League or League of Ireland at some stage. But you're right, from really kind of setting the mini youth team world alight, it's quite bleak to look at it now. We talk about Jack Grealish, who back then was already carrying himself with a swagger. And, you know, there's a lot of noise and excitement about Jack, who incidentally didn't go on and make his debut until probably a year after that. Callum Robinson, who's, I think, is now at Cardiff and who's had a pretty good career, to be honest, probably existing top end of the Championship, really, more so than being an established Premier League player. I think there's only those two, really, who you could say.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have gone on to deliver. Is that fair, or being harsh on the others?
I mean, it's difficult because you say you're being harsh on the players, but it's probably not the players' fault, as you mentioned, because it's a difficult one, because obviously the club have got things. There's reasons why those players haven't not necessarily made it, because just because you win a next gen, as you know, doesn't mean that you become a Champions League player. It just doesn't work like that. You know, like Rian Brewster and Ben Woodburn coming out of Liverpool, everyone had high hopes of them, just as two random players that popped on my head, and they're struggling to hit games in the Championship or even lower now, I'm not too sure. But the fact that they can't make careers in the professional game anyway, like moving on a little bit further, when we had that team of like Hepburn Murphy, Callum O'Hare, Jordan Lydon, I think it was when we won the sort of Youth FA Cup, I think it was in like 2017, perhaps 2016. Those players have still forged careers in the professional game, but for the majority of them not to get to that level is that I think that's what's alarming to the, you know, I don't think that can be blamed on the players, if that makes sense. And I'm sure you agree, but it's mainly the club. We were in such a difficult position in terms of the first team and the ownership and etc. That group of players clearly weren't given the best opportunity after they've turned 19 or 20 to, or given the best advice or whatever it may be. There's a reason why they've sort of slipped out of the net, like completely, and not just out of the Premier League or whatever it may be. But the, you know, we say a lot of them weren't even playing at 25, which is crazy to think. Like, imagine being, you know, sitting there 5 years ago, you've won the best competition you could possibly win for your age group, and then you're not playing for, you know, Carlisle or something in League Two. You can't get to that level. So that's what's, I think, you know, so alarming to sort of judge that success. And then, well, actually, if you counter it, can it be judged as a success? Because it's a academy thing and those players haven't gone on to those careers. So, yeah, it is difficult to sort of bring back up, I suppose.
You look down some of the other squads that were involved as well. Kind of Liverpool were involved in that. And I think Connor Cody was the kind of outstanding one, or the one who's gone on, you know, become an England international. And in against Chelsea in the final, I think you can only look at a handful. I think... I did make some notes. I think there was Nathan Ake, wasn't there?
Loftus-Cheek, I think.
Yeah, it was. He was Loftus-Cheek, yeah. So listen, this could degenerate from being a chat about kind of next gen to a kind of big kind of, you know, dissecting academy football and stuff like that. But this is kind of half the problem, that there's so many players who, at that level, I mean, there's so many players who get cut adrift at 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. When you get to 19... and you're playing in a top-level European competition, you probably expect that you're going to make a living out of the game, whether that's at the top end or whether that's further down the pyramid. But it just shows that a lot of the other clubs involved as well would have had that kind of natural falling away of players. So I think, yeah, rather than us worrying too much about kind of what became of them, let's just celebrate the moment. We haven't had too much silverware to rejoice, have we, in the last 10 years? So let's just... Take the shiny silver pot and be proud.
After the Olympiacos, then they fly to Como. We play Sporting. We beat them. I think it was extra time. I think we needed to beat them 3-1. But the players knew that because they beat them 5-1 away from home only a couple of weeks ago, then that was the sort of ticket to the final, as long as they played as well as they could. But you say the Chelsea squad there, I think they flew Nathan Ake out to Italy. I don't think it was just to like man mark Jack Grealish or anything like that. I think it was mainly because of like an injury or something. But either way, that sort of does prove what an achievement is, not only to win the tournament and say play like 10 games and get over the line, but also to be that Chelsea team, because there were some very good players playing for Chelsea back then. Say Loftus-Cheek, Christensen, who's playing for Barcelona. They had another few players around the fringes, like Lewis Baker, I think, won player of the tournament. So to overcome that Chelsea team was some achievement in itself.
The good thing about that Villa team, like I said, was I've already said about McAndrew being this strict disciplinarian. Then I just remembered what Samuel Carruthers was famous for after leaving Villa, which was did he urinate in a pint glass at Cheltenham or something when he was at MK Dons? So he clearly missed one of the lessons about discipline that week. But I think the youth team vibe, you know, we've spoken to other academy players of different generations, but have come through and, you know, make sure that you kind of wore black. You know, I think Andy Vyman telling us that he got loads of boots sent to him by his boot supplier, and they had to colour them in with black pen because they could only wear black boots and that kind of thing. It's probably towards the last days of youth teams having to do those kind of, you know, sweeping the dressing room and almost kind of earning your rights. So I think that having got to that stage, there was no way that Conor McAndrew would let them be overawed. You know, he wanted to create a bunch of young, you know, hopefully responsible professional young men. The other thing that struck me, John, about that squad was the Irish contingent. I think that's why a lot of them kind of naturally, when they realised they weren't going to make it, kind of went back across the water and started to play over there again. But so there's a big Irish contingent there. I mean, I think did Burke finish top scorer for the tournament?
Yeah, joint top scorer, 7 goals, yeah.
So that was impressive. And I think Mickey Drennan as well, I think he missed the final through injury. I think Graham Burke played the final with a groin strain, I think, and managed to battle through. Okay. Scored both the two penalties, I think, wasn't it? Scored both the penalties in the final. So Mickey Drennan was the one. There was a real kind of buzz around him at the time and just kind of disappeared from, you know, into obscurity, I suppose. We've got on the podcast in the past, we've managed to get Josh Webb and Luis Kinsella. It probably fits my narrative more than the Samuel Carruthers at Cheltenham example, but really kind of well-adjusted young men. You know, had to drop down the leagues and eventually playing non-league, but no real bitterness there, just a sense of privilege that they, you know, that their ability and their hard work took them as far as it did, but just a realisation that sometimes life doesn't fall in your lap that way. So players leaving with a good grounding, and I think as well as Aston Villa trying to create footballers either for their own first team or to make money on that play elsewhere in the football pyramid, if they can try and, sounds a bit like I'm preaching there, but if they can try and teach people good habits along the way, and there's a few they haven't been able to teach those habits to. Just sound like David O'Leary now as well, but just a really kind of a good bunch of honest bunch of lads, mate, really.
Yeah, but that is half of an academy's role, and possibly more so nowadays, because people forget those lads will be in the academy for, I think Grealish joined when he was 6, so that's all they know. And you have your school, but if you think you're going to make it, you're going all out for your football. So when you go into that environment, you can't be, you know, as you say, they need to sort of sculpt these young people as people who can hopefully get, you know, say a career in the game, but also, yeah, mould them as sort of good, honest young men. And say, on the whole, that's what's happened. The star of the show, I think it's probably time we've sort of moved on to him, Jack Grealish. No prizes for guessing who our talisman was through the tournament. Oh, you spoke to Kinsella on the podcast, and we'll link that in the comments as well if people haven't seen it yet. And there was a nice segment about the next gen run, but more specifically Jack Grealish as well, because those lads have been with Jack from the age of whenever they joined the academy. Jack would have been there, as I say, because he was there since 6 years old. He can't sort of come in younger than that. And we'll just break and go to Kinsella and what he said about Jack. He said some really nice stories about his former teammate.
Yeah, Jack's natural ability. I was literally speaking to him the other day about it, saying, like, imagine when we were 16, like, walking around the ball ring, saying, like, imagine, like, doing what you're doing now. And he was like, no, I knew I would be anyway. So I was just like laughing. And I said, to be fair, there was this time at Hinckley where Benjamin Seagrass, he come out and caught a corner and he hit this side volley, and it was like coming down with snow, and it was so high. And Jack's like running, he slid, and he's managed to keep the ball up while he's on the floor and dribble off of it. And my dad was at that game, and he's like, "This kid is like going to be something special. Like, he's ridiculous." And then there was another time we were playing against Watford, and I've like tried to curl one down the line and probably shanked it a bit. And it's another one that's coming down with like snow, and it's so high. And Tony McAndrew's like left his seat to come and sort of like catch the ball to give it for them to take a throw. And like Jack's run and like kept it up while he's running and dribbled off with it. And Tony's just like sat back down with his hands and he did.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's interesting because it's got me feeling a little bit whimsical and a little bit nostalgic for 2013 rather than 1982 for a change. There's a Villa fan called Villa Boy on YouTube who manages to, I'm not sure he owns the rights to any of it, but he posts all the footage for goals and matches and stuff so you can watch the whole Next Gen final. I didn't do that. I'm not that diligent. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I just kind of fast-forwarded through bits of it and I don't know why I was surprised, but Jack Grealish playing exactly the same way, kind of slowing the game down, just playing with a strut and a swagger, you know, and he looks a lot different and his calves are a little bit smaller. I remember speaking to one of Jack's academy teammates. He wasn't involved in that squad, I don't think, but a lad called Ollie Stevenson, who went on to become a first-team conditioning coach at Villa. Didn't quite make the grade, but they invited him back. Really great guy, really diligent, really really professional. But he used to tell the story about Jack Grealish, you know, going to the gym and he could like volley the ball into kind of basketball hoops from 40 yards and stuff like that. But so Ollie was the real swat. So when they'd have their lessons, Ollie would be kind of getting his head down and Jack would be trying to lean over and kind of copy his own work and stuff like that. Yeah. But Jack would just be this naturally kind of gifted, you know, kind of talent, as we've seen. I think it's a credit to Jack Grealish, the coaching that he's received, the character that he is, and the grounding that he's had from his family. That glare arrived pretty soon, pretty early with him, and it takes some doing to not only kind of live up to that expectation, but to probably smash through that ceiling. But yeah, so I'd advise anybody to just check out clips from either that game or from earlier in the run, and you can see Jack, you can almost see the development of Jack Grealish and the player that he went on to become.
Getting a career in the game and say earning a living off it, that's the dream really. But no, fair play to Jack, is we know what a talent is, and it's one of those sort of cringy like what is something to do with like hard talent fails when it doesn't work hard or something like that. Yeah. So for all the talent that Jack had from that, probably from when he was like, 10 years old, everyone in the academy could probably see it straight away. And when he was six, that's when the academy coaches pulled his parents aside and said, look, we need to keep Jack in the system for as long as it takes, because he clearly had that natural ability. And we see it now. You can't, some of the stuff he does, you can't teach or learn or copy and develop. It's just a sort of 1 in 100, or possibly more than that, superstar that no other Premier League player can almost be compared to. And he was doing that, as you say, since he was a teenager. So for all the talent he had. And there's been lots of times in his Villa career since he became a professional where there was points where it was like, well, you've got to stop that habit, or you've got to focus on this, or you must, you know, do this better, whatever it may be. And, you know, he's had good mentors along the way, like Tim Sherwood trusted him. Tim Sherwood actually tried to sign him when he was 16 for Tottenham. Obviously, Man United tried to do the same a bit before then. So everyone knew he had the talent, but for Jack to become the player he is today, it's, you know, that's years and years of hard work. It's not just being born with a gift. There's plenty of players who have been born with, you know, talent, but haven't made it potentially because of different reasons. But Jack is, you need a bit of luck on the way, but he's made that luck, is what I'm trying to say.
And listen, if we're talking about the success of that team, they won a trophy, they gave us something to remember, they gave us hopes, albeit not all of them delivered. But in terms of financially, Jack Grealish's fee alone has paid for that academy for kind of several years.
Individually, I think that's a lot of those players, and as Kinsella's told you, a lot of those players could have done more with their careers but didn't. But if one's going to make it as far as what Jack's done, then it's hard to sort of look back on it and, you know, too negatively. Little question for you, Matt, to sort of round us off. Can you name, I don't know how I found this, can you name the one Villa player that's currently in the senior squad that was at the Next Gen series competition that year? Wasn't obviously in the Villa squad because we don't have any of those players anymore. But yeah, there is a player in the Villa squad that played for another club in the Next Gen. You can have a look on the wiki and see what the clubs were in there if you want, but I don't know if you'd get it.
Was it a British club?
No.
I've got no idea, mate. You've stumped me. Go on.
Leander Dendonker of Anderlecht.
Blimey.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting looking through, as you mentioned earlier, looking through the clubs who were playing for the teams and whatever it may be. Adama Traore was playing for Barcelona as well, so they played each other, which I thought we need to get a photo of that somewhere. And there's a couple of others that I'll read out that Premier League fans will know. So Kenny Tete was playing for Ajax, obviously playing now for Fulham. João Palhinha playing for Sporting, also at Fulham actually. Kingsley Coman, Areola, both playing for PSG. Leo Bonatini was at Wolves, he was playing for Juventus, which I had no idea about. Serge Gnabry, Hector Bellerin for Arsenal, and then Julian Brandt, who's obviously a German international, playing for Wolfsburg. So it's weird how those players would have been like the same age as Jack, obviously, and they still are. 18, 19, doing their thing. And then 10 years later, they're sort of like at the peak of their careers. It's weird to look back and sort of go back in time and have a look, not just at our players, but the ones that have, done well for themselves elsewhere. But that list is about 10 players long. The other players that most people wouldn't even be aware of. So again, that sort of proves you can win that competition and not make it in terms of where you want to get to. But so that, again, that's sort of the argument of we had Grealish come through, Callum Robinson, even if two make it, that's sometimes as good as it gets for, you know, those, you know, after doing those sort of competitions, and that'll be the same moving forward as well. So any sort of last moments, comments on the Next Gen, Matt?
No, the only final word really is what seen a quote from Tony McAndrew, which I think sums it up quite nicely. And they will become little legends in academy folklore, which I think, you know, they've won their place. They've won the Youth European Cup. And good luck to them.
Thanks to everyone for watching this video. Please leave a like rating. And we'll drop some links in the comments as well of Matt's chats with Josh Webb, Lewis Kinsella. Some articles as well will be going up over the next few days or have already gone out. So please check those up too. Thanks, Matt, for joining me. And cheers, everyone. Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue and Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your thoughts and comments. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.